Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. My name is Amy Lansky, and actually I am unintentionally doing a pre-recorded show today. I had intended to do this live, and just as I was about to set up for a live show, I discovered that it wasn't working, and that I called Edaranga at Autism One and found out we're not doing live shows anymore. So I am recording this show during the time at which I would normally be live, and the show will be uploaded later. So it should come, you should be able to listen to this, I guess, sometime in the middle of the afternoon on October 20th. And my apologies to those of you who tuned in for a live show. So hopefully you'll listen to it later, because I think it'll be a show that will be interesting to most of you. I have many times people, you know, write to me, and a lot of their questions have to do with dosing. How do we understand which potencies to use, which method of dosing? This is a very confusing area for a lot of people in homeopathy, even for homeopaths, I must say. And so that's the subject of today's show, understanding dosing in homeopathy. For those of you who have never tuned into this show before, this show is called There's Hope with Homeopathy, and its focus is on the use of classical homeopathic treatment and how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. Well, let's see. It's October 20th. I always like to do a little current events. I had a bit of an excitement for myself last week. I was on my way, actually, to the board meeting for the National Center for Homeopathy, and I had intended to spend just a few days in Buffalo, New York, on the way to the meeting, visiting with my mom there, who's 91, and, you know, in pretty good health, thanks to homeopathy, I must say. She used to be in better health, but had, those of you who tune into the show know she really got very sick in February, but is doing better. Anyway, I was visiting with her, and that humongous storm that some of you may have heard about hit Buffalo the day before I was supposed to leave, and it was very unusual. I mean, it's unusual for them to get that much snow in October, but the real problem wasn't the amount of snow, which Buffalo really does know how to handle. It was that the trees were in full bloom still, and within 24 hours, 2 feet of very heavy wet snow came down. Never happened before in all of the history in Buffalo. And I'm literally telling you, this is the truth. Every single tree in Buffalo, except the pine trees, were severely damaged, lost, you know, a large proportion of their limbs, heavy limbs. And the whole city is basically now covered in trees. Tree debris, you know, trees falling down, or parts of trees falling down, which caused thousands of power lines to go down. 500,000 people lost power, and many of those people still don't have power now, a week later. And obviously, I wasn't going to leave my 91-year-old mom in the cold and the dark, so I stayed on until she got power. She was one of the lucky ones who got it after 3 days. Nevertheless, 3 days in the cold and the dark, is it difficult, especially for a 91-year-old person? It was pretty hard on me, though, too. And so send your good wishes to Buffalo. Apparently, they have thousands of crews in there helping from all over, you know, as far as Virginia. They've sent people in there because it's going to take months, really, to clean up the city. And the trees, unfortunately, will never be the same. I started thinking about that, thinking about what remedy do these trees need, you know? The shock, first of all, this shock of being, you know, in autumn, and it was been pretty warm, and then suddenly being covered in an avalanche of snow like this and then losing your limbs. I mean, what a shock to these trees. So the first remedy I thought of was aconite, sudden shock states. Often from in cold, dry, in this case it was cold and wet, so that made me also think about the remedy Rust Tox, which is, worse from cold and wet. And better from movement. Actually, this made me think of the Buffalonians, who were cold and wet. Let me tell you, many people had to spend days bailing out their basements as well because of the water melting, and their sump pumps weren't working without electricity. So they were cold and wet, but everybody seemed to feel a little better when they were moving around and getting warm. So there's Russ Talks for you. So just a homeopathic perspective on really almost like a mini Katrina-like situation. No comparison. Obviously, just a few people died in this thing, but it was an emergency. It was really a tragedy kind of situation for the city. And I think it's another sign, unfortunately, of global warming, because the Great Lakes were unusually warm, and then this unusually cold blast of air came in. Anyway, back to homeopathy in the show. For those of you just tuning in, too, for the first time, I want to encourage you to go to my book website. It's impossiblecure.com. This show is based on my book, Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy, which is pretty much the best-selling book on homeopathy at Amazon these days. So to find out all about it, go to impossiblecure.com. And on that site, you'll find lots of info. There's an autism page that includes recommendations, referrals to practitioners. There's also the Cure Stories database, and I encourage those of you who have any interesting story you'd like to contribute to the Cure Stories database. And there are also on that, from the main page of the site, on the right-hand side, you'll see a button for a link to past archives of this show. And if you would like to catch up on the show, you can use this show as a short course, free course on homeopathy. And a lot of people are increasingly doing that. I get messages from people that they enjoy listening to the show and they're learning about homeopathy that way. Just go and start listening to the archives. And I'm actually going to be downloading more of the recent shows to the archives, but you can listen to them on the Autism One site too. But there's archives there for almost 2 years now of shows, once a month. Okay, well, let's see. Today's show, as I told you, is going to be about dosing. My November show is going to be another interview. I'm going to be doing interviews now, usually every other month. And in November, it's going to be with Rhode Island homeopath Tricia Fijo, who also treats many autistic kids successfully. So you can tune in to hear more about her methods and her success with autistic kids. Also, if you have any questions, it's always a good idea to send me an email to Lansky@impossiblecure.com or alansky@autismone.org. And I respond to people usually within a few days, at most a week. And I can give people referrals, answer your questions, but I always prefer to talk to parents through email because it's just too overwhelming for me otherwise. So let's move on, because I do have a lot of content to get through today, and we'll see how far I get. So the subject today is dosing, and that means how does the homeopath decide what potency of the remedy to give you, and whether to give it to you as dry pills or in liquid form, how much should you take, how often should you take it, and how do you take it, what methodology should you use for administering the remedy. And if you want to really understand, I recommend you should buy my book, Impossible Cure, and read Chapter 6. So the focus of today's show is really the first part of Chapter 6. So, you know, in past shows we've talked a lot about, the concept of the law of similars, how the remedy chosen is the one that matches your characteristics, your personal idiosyncrasies of you or your child. And that is really still the most important thing that the homeopath has to do, is determine which is the remedy that's most suited for you. And in classical homeopathy, no mixtures of remedies are given, a single remedy is chosen that is the best overall fit for the person. I'll say with a caveat that there are in certain acute circumstances you might give several different remedies in succession. For example, in a trauma situation, you know, where you've been injured, you might give arnica and hypericum if you have puncture wounds, or if you have an insect bite, it's often good to give, let's say, Apis, honeybee, you know, bee, less if you were stung by an insect in your red and swelling, there's Apis, Hypericum, and Ledum for puncture wounds and nerve damage. Those are cases where you might give more than one remedy, but that's very unusual in homeopathy, in classical homeopathy. Usually you're going for one remedy. So when you go see the homeopath, and I've talked about this in previous shows, you know, the homeopath trying to figure out what this remedy is to give you, but then they've got to decide about the dosing with the remedy. And in homeopathy, homeopaths call this part of homeopathy posology, the whole art of dosing. And it's a very complex issue. In fact, I've been treated myself by three different homeopaths over the years, and I found that every single homeopath has their own, you know, methodology or ideas about dosing. And so, you know, if you go see one homeopath, you may end up experiencing very different dosing techniques than another homeopath, even if they decide to give you the same remedy. And so, you know, it's really an art form, and it's, you know, like everything in homeopathy, the most appropriate dose for you is really going to be determined by your individual peculiarities or your susceptibilities. For a person who's not very overly sensitive, the type of dosing is probably not going to make as much difference. For a person who is very highly sensitive, and I put autistic kids in that category often, not always, but very often, then the dosing can really make a difference. And I have heard of situations where people who did not respond to some methods of dosing responded beautifully to other methods of dosing, even using the same remedy. Like I said, the types of dosing can vary widely. I mean, many homeopaths just use very infrequent dry doses where you're taking these pills in higher potencies or a range of potencies very infrequently, you know, perhaps even only one pill every few months. Other homeopaths use liquid dosing, and I'll be talking about that today, exclusively, and in those cases, sometimes, usually, but not always, but usually these are given more frequently, maybe every day, once a week, etc. Or in India, you hear stories about homeopaths who use very high potency dry doses daily. I mean, they're giving people, for those of you who already understand the dosing, the potency things, I've heard of homeopaths from India giving a 1 mg dry pill every single day, which is usually unheard of in the United States. But it's possible that people in India tend to generally not be as sensitive as Americans. They don't use as many drugs, so they may not have developed the sort of low-level chronic bad health and sensitivity that Americans have. So maybe this works for them. But anyway, even though dosing is an art, there are certain principles that that underlie the choice of potency and the choice of dosing method. And these are outlined in my book, and I refer people especially to page 146 and 147 in my book. So as I say, dosing must be adjusted to the individual susceptibility of the patient. If a person is a very, really insensitive person, very hard to penetrate, you may need to give them very high potencies very frequently. I've seen this in a patient of my own once. I usually start at a low dry dose if I decide to do dry dosing. at like 30, and I just was sure this was the right remedy, and I moved up to 30, 200, 1M, and finally only at 10M did I register an effect on this person. This person just was needed this very high dose. In contrast, some patients who are highly sensitive might get a horrible aggravation from just a very low dose, even in water. And it's really hard to know how a patient is going to react. There's clues. If the person tends to be very sensitive to drugs and have allergies and have chronic bad health, or elderly people, then you will know that they were more likely to be a very sensitive person. If the person is more young, like a child, very robust in general, and have very strong symptoms, which is actually can be a sign of robustness, of high vitality, then you can give higher doses. So let's get into this. But the bottom line, though, because there's such a wide variety of susceptibility in people, it's a corollary of that you can't have any fixed protocols in dosing, or it's not very wise to do so. So if a homeopath is always giving everybody the same dosing and the same methods, I would be wary of them, because that means they're not tuning their use of remedies to the susceptibility of the patient. I mean, maybe most of their patients tend to, you know, have the same level of sensitivity. I don't know. But that's very unusual, actually. So, in general, it's hard to know in advance really how people react. So most homeopaths will proceed a little cautiously at first. And it's going to take patience on the part of the patient to work with the homeopath and find the correct dosing method, even if they have found the correct remedy. So, you know, the word patient is related to the word patience. And I often say this, with homeopathy, often you must be patient. So let me begin now with understanding what the potency, different types of potencies are. And many of you have heard of these terms, the X potencies, where like a remedy might be a 3X, let's say, the C potencies, which come in doses like 12C, 30C, etc., and then the LM doses. So let's first distinguish between these three potencies. Okay, now in homeopathy, as you know, the more dilute, the more this substance has been diluted, the stronger the remedy. So that's counterintuitive, but just accept it. It is true. So let's start with the C potencies, because these are the most frequently used potencies in homeopathy. In a C potency, these words X, C, L, M, C stands for 100. This is in Roman numerals. So in this case, each step of dilution is done 1 to 100. So I'll overview how you would make, let's say, a 3C potency remedy. Let's say you were making a remedy from arnica, the arnica flower. You would start with what's called a mother tincture, which is usually made by soaking the flower, let's say, in alcohol or whatever, sometimes by grinding up the substance. And you start with that, the mother tincture, and to make the first dilution, you take one drop of that substance and dilute it in 99 drops of usually a mixture of water and alcohol. And that creates the 1C potency. Oh, and I should also say, after it's mixed, you must shake it up vigorously. This is called succussion. Very important homeopathy, because if you did not do the succussion step, the shaking, eventually there would be no effect after in these high potencies. So the succussion was an important discovery of Hahnemann, that succussion, the dilution followed by succussion, increases somehow the effect of the substance. To create a 2C then, you would take one drop of the 1C and then dilute that in another 99 drops, and creating the 2C. And then the 3C, you would just do that again with the preceding one. So that's the way the remedies are made. A 30C then is this dilution of 1 to 100 is done 30 times. And in fact, by the time you reach 12C, you have exceeded Avogadro's number, which is the point at which there's likely to be a molecule of, let's say, the arnica in that dilution. Nevertheless, with this process of sequential dilution and succussion, the shaking, the energy, the idea is that the energy of the substance is embedded in this dilution. And what about those pills that you get then? Well, those pills are prepared by taking whatever potency you've developed. Let's say you've created the 30C potency, and you take some drops of that and you just drop them on these pills. So when you're buying those little pills in the store, those pills have been, they're little sugar pills that have been impregnated with this this dilution preparation. Some of you may have seen on bottles saying CK potencies or CH potencies. These are really technical terms. A CK potency is a C potency that was made using the Korsakov method, which means that each successive potency was made in the same bottle as the previous one. This is sort of a shortcut. Some places do this. Instead of having a separate dilution vial for each potency, you just empty it out and reuse the same vial. Empty out everything except one drop and then reuse the same vial to create the next higher potency. That's Korsakov potencies. A CH is a Hahnemannian potency where a different bottle is used for each of the dilutions. Okay, so that's the basic method, and I want to also say that if a substance that the remedy is created from is not soluble, can't be dissolved, it is at first diluted through grinding. So let's say you have a metal that you're making ready from gold, let's say. You can't just dissolve gold in water. So it's initially, in the first few dilution steps, the substance is ground with milk sugar, in this case, so like one unit of gold, let's say, ground into 99 units of milk sugar. And usually what will happen is that after a certain potency, let's say you do this kind of dilution, it's called trituration. If you do that up to a certain potency, usually 3C, 4C, then it will become soluble and can be done in water. Now, the way that X potencies are made, you can often see these in the health food stores, 12X, etc. It's the same as the C's, except that instead of diluting 1 to 100, it's 1 to 10. That's why it's X, Roman numeral X for 1 to 10. Sometimes these are called D potencies for the decimal, 1 to 10. And finally, the LM potencies are, LM stands for 50,000, because M is 1,000, L is 5. Sometimes these are also called Q potencies for, I can't even say the word right now, it's quiquam, blah, 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 some, the way, it's the actual Latin word for 50,000, starts with the letter Q, so they're sometimes called Q potencies. And in this case, each dilution step is 1 to 50,000. And by the way, the LM potencies, and hopefully I'll get to them today, were developed specifically to be used in water dosing. So that's usually how those are used. C or X potencies can be used as dry pills or as in water dosing. Okay. So now you understand how the remedies are made and what it means when you take a 30C or a 200C remedy. By the way, a 1M is the same as a 1000C. A 10M potency is the same as a 10,000C. Okay, so one of the questions people often ask me is, do the potencies add up? So if I take 230C pills, is that the same as 60C? Well, after this explanation, you can see that that is not true. A 30C is very different than a 60C. A 30C pill was made by doing this dilution 30 times. A 60C pill is made from doing the dilution 60 times. So if you simply take two of the 30C pills, you're just still getting a 30C remedy. You're not, it's quite different. It's completely different than a 60C remedy. And in fact, it's best to think of the potencies as a quality, not a quantity, unlike allopathic medicines. If you take 15 milligrams, take two of them, you get 30 milligrams in normal medicines. If you take two pills of the same potency, really, it's not any different than taking one pill of the same potency. And so there's one of the things I want to tell you, that in homeopathy, the amount that you take, the number of pills you take in any particular dose, is not so important. Some homeopaths will say, oh, take five pills. Some will just say, take one pill. It really doesn't matter. Now, if you're extremely highly sensitive, it might matter. But in general, it doesn't matter. The only reason many homeopaths will tell you to take, let's say, three pills, five pills, or whatever, is that when the dilution is applied to the pills, it's possible, unlikely but possible, that some of it didn't get on some of the pills. And so by taking more pills, you're increasing making sure that you are getting a dose of the remedy. So don't worry about quantity for each dose that much, nor the shape of the pill. All of that doesn't matter. It only matters that this dilution was applied to the pill and that you're taking it. However, the frequency with which you take the remedy does matter much more. So it matters much more. It affects you much more differently if you're taking a remedy, let's say, once a day versus once a month, or three times a day versus once a day. Because each time you take a dose of the remedy, it's sort of giving your body an energetic hit. So if you're doing it more frequently, you're being given this information much more frequently. Well, the way I usually try to explain that to people is that think of your energy body, your vital force, as a ball, and it's like, let's say, not going in the right direction. And each time you take the remedy, it's like pushing that ball in the right direction. If you give it a real precise nudge, that ball will start rolling and keep rolling. And you don't need to keep nudging it until it stops rolling or if it's rolling in the wrong direction. So that is why in homeopathy, you could just give somebody a dose of the correct remedy and the right potency, and it will get that ball rolling, and you won't need to have another dose of the remedy until you are relapsing. So I'll get a little more into that later. Also, what is the difference between these qualities, let's say, between a 30C, a 200C, a 1000C? Well, there's lots of thought about that in homeopathy. One way of thinking of it is that a higher potency remedy is more pinpointed, is more precise. It's like a needle versus a blunt instrument. So a lower potency, more blunt, more blunted, sometimes can be viewed as having a more broad spectrum effect. A real high potency, very pinpointed, very strong, if it's accurate, will really hit the spot. Now, there's no scientific way yet of measuring these frequencies, etc. But you can think of possibly of the potency as a highly precise frequency. That's the way I think of it. So if it's a lower potency, just more blunted, maybe a less fine frequency. So there's many criteria for selecting the potency that's right for a person. And the general rule is that the higher the vitality of the person, the higher the potency. So that translates into lots of heuristics or rules that homeopaths tend to use. For young children who are healthy, I mean, many autistic kids are not that very healthy, but if you have just a typical young, healthy child, like with a fever or, even if they're having very sick, but if they're still in general a high vitality person, they can tolerate a higher potency and will work very well with them, just a dry, high potency remedy. Older people, lower vitality, usually give them low potencies. in acute diseases with very strong symptoms, this usually means that the person has a high vitality if they can manifest strong symptoms, let's say a high fever in an acute disease, then they usually get higher potencies. If a person has very low vitality, they may be very sick, but they often are manifesting very weak symptoms. Let's say in older people can be very sick, even with an infection, but can only manifest a low fever because they have a low vitality. And that's why their body can't repair itself as fast, and another reason they get lower potencies. Sensitive people, they've been compromised often by toxins, by too much drugging, lower potencies. If a person is taking lots of allopathic drugs while they're undergoing homeopathic treatment, these drugs might interfere with the remedy. And therefore, often it's like that ball's getting knocked off course much more frequently, so they will need to take more frequent doses of the remedy, and often, therefore, they also usually have a lower vitality because of the drugging, so they usually take more frequent lower doses of remedies. If a person has very strong mental symptoms, emotional mental symptoms, this is actually usually a sign of high vitality. People who can't manifest mental symptoms usually, not always, unless it's a mental illness. These people are very sick, but let's say this person just has very strong emotional, very florid symptoms, that's usually a sign of higher vitality, and they often get very high doses. If a person has chronic physical problems, usually lower potencies. Not always, but often. And another heuristic that homeopaths use is that the more certain they are of the remedy, they might give a higher dose because they know that this is really the right pinpointed remedy for the person. In general, lower potencies can be repeated more frequently than higher potencies, but not always. Some people are really sensitive even to a lower potency and they would take infrequent doses, and some people are really insensitive and need repetition of high doses. Also, in acute diseases, you usually have to repeat more frequently than in chronic diseases. But always in homeopathy, the less that is given, the better. So it's always the goal of the homeopath to give less remedy, or it should be. So the less amount, the less frequent, the less pills even. If you're giving it in water, the less amount of water. The less, the better. In other words, try to push that ball as infrequently as possible. The more that ball can stay rolling in the right direction on its own without additional pushes, the better. So I always, as I also mentioned in my book, take a remedy only when you relapse, only when you need it. And sometimes you feel like you might be relapsing, but it's just a bad day. You can wait and see if you really are relapsing. So take the remedy. If you're improving, just don't do anything. Just only take a redose if you relapse. If you're having an aggravation, which means an increase of your symptoms, don't take any more. It means that you are reacting to the remedy, and hopefully after a day or two, you will go in the other direction and you will start getting better. But if you're aggravating, best to not take any more doses. And if you ever have any doubt at all, call your homeopath. That's their job, to help you with the dosing. So, okay, now I think we're getting into, I've been on for half an hour already, and I want to get into the dry versus the liquid, but I can see that I'm going to have another show on this subject. But let me start and give you some information here. Now, all potencies, X, usually not done in liquid, but any potency can be given as dry as a pill or in liquid. And what does this mean? When a liquid potency is given, all it means is that one of these pills has been put into some water and diluted in the water. And the idea behind this method is that somehow by administering the remedy in water, it can enter your body more quickly, more effectively, and the effect of the remedy is slightly more gentle. More than that, by shaking up this bottle of remedy, you're actually increasing before each dose. So let's say you dilute, put a 30C pill in a vial of water. It's usually a dropper bottle or a 4-ounce bottle. Every time you take the dose, you would shake up that bottle and then take a drop or a teaspoon, whatever the dosing that's been told to you. By shaking it up each time you take a dose, you're slightly increasing the potency of the remedy. And the idea behind that is that that's a very good way for the body to be nudged more and more precisely in the correct direction. Now, the whole methodology of dry versus liquid is really because of Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy. At first, he was giving dry pills only. And as he was developing his system, he experimented with liquid and then with developing this different dilution level, the LMs. So this is the progression of his own thoughts about homeopathy. First using dry, then liquid, C's in liquid, and then the LM potencies in liquid. And this development was mirrored in his different editions of The Organon, which is his book about homeopathy. There were six different editions. Up until the fourth edition of the book, he was still just using C potencies dry. And by the way, X potencies were developed after Hahnemann's time, so there were no X potencies in Hahnemann's time. So in the homeopaths who are really only familiar with the fourth edition of the Organon is still using dry C potencies. In the fifth edition of the Organon, and this is all, by the way, were developed in the early 1800s. In the fifth edition, Hahnemann started diluting C potencies in water as a way of making the remedies less aggravating to patients who were very sensitive. And then in the sixth edition of the Organon, which unfortunately was only published in 1921, he developed the LM potency system, which is the dilution of 1 to 50,000 and to be used exclusively in water. And because that sixth edition of the Organon was published not until 1921, it didn't really spread around the world. A lot of people had already been trained in homeopathy, and schools had been developed and methods had been developed in homeopathy using just C potencies, either dry or in liquid. And a lot of people did not learn about the LM potency system and its particular methods. And that's why many homeopaths to this day are just learning about how to use LM potencies, because it really wasn't taught in schools. The older teachers did not know how to use it. Only in recent times has it become more popular. So many of you may have homeopaths who only use dry C dosing or C's in water and don't understand the use of LMs, but they need to read, get online. There are certain teachers who use these LM potencies exclusively. Read the sixth edition of the Organon and learn about it, because it's a very important potency system, especially for very sensitive patients, and I think especially for autistic kids. That's the dosing system that my son Max used when he was recovering from from autism. Although now he and me and the rest of my family, we only use dry C potencies because, you know, we're pretty healthy and that's fine for us. And I have heard of autism practitioners who only use dry C's, actually. They use low potencies with autistic kids, maybe 12 C's. And it works. But I think to have the LM dosing in your repertoire is important for most homeopaths, and they should educate themselves to that. Okay, well, I think I'm running out of time now, and I am going to talk more about this. I may not get to it until the December show. So I may start the December show with talking more, finishing up this talk about potencies, describing how, basically how to do liquid C and LM dosing. But if you don't want to wait until then, you should read Chapter 6 of Impossible Cure. So, once again, I want to encourage all of you to go to the ImpossibleCure.com website and find out how to buy Impossible Cure. For those of you who are interested, I am planning on having a bit of a sale in November and December. If you buy in bulk, many of you, you know, really do like Impossible Cure, and maybe you'd like to give it as a Christmas gift to your relatives. So if you buy in bulk, which is in multiple of five books, you get a discount. And in between mid-November and mid-December, I'm going to be offering no shipping costs. So now I'm actually going out of town, so I won't be able to ship right up to Christmas. So it would be best if you order, if you plan on doing this, order by like something like December 10th. So I haven't figured this out completely yet, but if you go to the ImpossibleCure.com website and order in bulk sometime like after November 15th, you'll get free shipping. That's about all I have time for. Just also to remind those of you who want to participate, there's a great classical homeopathy mailing list for parents called homeopathysnc.org. Go to that website to sign up. It's a Yahoo group, Homeopathy for Special Needs Children. So to find out more about that, homeopathysnc.org. And finally, to encourage all of you to join the National Center for Homeopathy, the site is going to go, their website is going to undergo a major change at the end of this year, because I'm in charge of that project, actually, and we've been gearing up for a year now for this completely new look and feel for the website with lots of new features and stuff. So it's always a great time to join the National Center and get their amazingly informative magazine, Homeopathy Today, support the work of the National Center, and get huge amounts of information from their website. And you just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org to find out more. So in the meantime, remember, there's really hope with homeopathy. Be well, everyone. Bye-bye.